The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Today, I'm joined by Susie Hately. Susie helps entrepreneurs and executives who are skirting the edge of burnout. She helps them get back on their game and use their skills and talents most effectively. Building on her Bachelor of Science in Kinesthesiology and teaching yoga since 1999, she's the author of several best-selling yoga therapy books and videos and is founder of the Calm, Steady, Strong yoga program for cancer patients, survivors, and their families, which was studied at the University of Calgary from 2002 to 2009. Using yoga as the prime modality, Susie's specialty is helping high achievers rechannel their energy so they aren't exhausted and depleted. She teaches them how to see their symptoms as their body's communication mechanism and how to truly listen and act on what they're perceiving. The result? A calm, connected leader with sustainable, productive energy. Susie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Susie, this topic of burnout is such an important topic. You know, doing a lot of my clinical work, I see people just push, you know, accelerator, never get off the pedal, and find that they're just not happy after a while. They've reached that point of burnout. And you know, there's certainly a method and a madness to living a life and a career that's more sustainable. When you see your clients that are at this verge, can you just talk us through what are just some starting steps of how do you recognize it? What are some beginning signs or symptoms to start paying attention to?
Well, this might sound like an interesting response because most of the people who come to see me, they know that there's something wrong, but they're really only coming because somebody else told them to. So I'll have someone, many people will get, I'll get a referral from a sleep doctor or other health professional like that. And basically they've said, you know, you need to quit your job. And I've had one fellow who was told, or your job will kill you. And it was, so there tends to be, like, I find that a lot of people who are needing the most help actually won't acknowledge that they're burnt out. And when they come, they're often more in pain or they're in strain or they're not resting well or they're not recovering well. Their mental clarity has, which they used to see as being their one of their biggest skills, is no longer there. And they're getting a little frightened about losing mental capacity. So none of those things, they won't say to me, Susie, I'm burnt out, or I feel like I'm burning out. They will say all those other things, or they will say, and then someone has referred me and they told me this, and here is why I'm here. So it's interesting because I think in some cases, the people who are truly the most burnt out, the ones that I see anyway, who are really burnt out, won't actually acknowledge that they're burnt out because they're still trying to go.
Yeah. And I can understand that. I mean, I think that, you know, we kind of pat people on the back that, you know, persevere, push through, and we don't really create a culture where people ask for help or feel comfortable asking for help. And when people come to you, what are the first things that you do?
So I work with a person from a body perspective. And what I mean by that, in yoga, there's many different layers. So we can look at a body, we can look at breath, we can look at mental and emotional. And so I look at the body partly because that's my training with a BSc in kinesiology, but also because it is one of the more objective measures that we have in our state of being. It's really difficult to like put a measure on how your mind is doing, right? Because that can move all over the place and it's a bit more difficult to measure. Whereas with the body, I can see if a leg bone is moving in the hip socket or if the pelvis is moving or if there's gripping or if there's bracing. And so initially what I'm doing is I'm helping them move better. because most people who have pain or strain, they've got some limitation in movement pattern. Now, they might not know they have that limitation in movement pattern because so much of what is going on for us when we have cyclical patterns of pain or cyclical patterns of symptoms is it's under our level of awareness. So where the pain is isn't always the problem. Where the problem is we have to kind of dig for it. So I help them initially by moving better, and then out of moving better, they become aware of how they're moving in a very different way than they're used to.
So that's really fascinating that you see such a correlation between movement and just overall like mental, emotional state and, you know, mental clarity. And are there certain parts of the body that are more prone, that are there specific movement differences that you're looking for?
Well, if someone has pain or strain or some sort of symptom, some people call it ache, and it's in the lower back, I tend to notice initially what's going on at the leg bone, like the hip joints, like the leg bones in the hip sockets, because there tends to be something not working quite as well there. And then things that are sort of the rib cage and above, neck, shoulder, elbows, wrists, there tends to be something going on with the shoulder girdle. And that's the initial place that I'm looking for. But then you often find cross parallel where you can see impacts of the shoulder and the way the shoulders function and how the hips function. And you can see how the hips function will impact how the shoulders and the necks feel. There's a really strong correlation, for example, between how your jaw is and TMJ symptoms and what's going on at your hips. And midwives and OBGYNs, they've seen this over time with women who are in labor. And some will get women to sing or to like just move their jaw, because when they're holding a lot in their jaw, that tends to make the pelvis a little tighter, the insides of the pelvis tighter. So when the person starts to move their jaw more and more effectively, then things can happen better with birthing.
And when you look at, you know, movement, you know, as one, you know, I sit a lot at my desk and I'm sure my posture at times isn't perfect, yeah. Which is going to affect my biomechanics and different muscle groups aren't being used. Are there patterns that are just from poor body biomechanics that you would say are different than the patterns that are you see from burnout? Or is there a lot of overlap between this?
There's a lot of overlap. I would say that when someone is depleted and drained, they're going to have a lot more compensation. They're going to be utilizing their bodies in ways that are in a survival mechanism. So as an example, let's just say you have been sitting in a certain way and your body gets used to being in that place. And so whether it's limitations in the hips or limitations in the shoulders or that surreptitious kind of between the shoulder blades that gets tight.
Yeah, you're making me sit up a little taller right now.
And so then that pattern starts to set in. And so because that pattern's setting in, then maybe the shoulder blades don't move as well, or the pelvis doesn't move as well, the leg bones. And so then we find other ways of moving so that we get on with our life and get on with our day. And then because those patterns aren't really the ones that are meant to move those areas, then those will get fatigued. And then we find others, and then so we sort of stack. And then over time, it's more and more inefficient the way we're moving our body, and that contributes to us feeling drained. And so we might be using physiological energy in a way that's depleting, but then the way we're managing the general load through our bodies of walking and climbing stairs and doing our errands with our body, that becomes harder to do, and we become more depleted just because it's harder to do. So when someone starts to move better, and they become more efficient in their movement patterns, they manage their energy better. And so then they feel a lot lighter. So the overlap between pain and burnout, it's really similar.
Yeah. And when you notice the alterations in movement, mm-hmm. How do you help coach people to work out of the pattern that has become more subconsciously ingrained?
So initially what happens is that they realize first that let's say it's back pain, and then there's a correlation to how their hips are moving. And then they become, like, there was a fellow I was working with this morning who, as he said to me, he said, these exercises aren't new, but how I'm doing them is very different. Because he was bringing, like, a classic one we all know is bringing the knee to the belly when you're on your back. And so he was doing it and he was lifting his pelvis and gripping through his shoulders and just like kind of making it happen. And it was, he was just doing it very inefficiently. So it wasn't helping him at all. So then he was paying attention to how he was doing it. Then he was aware now of those movement patterns. And what became interesting is now he recognizes what relates to the pain, and his pain was going down. So he came in with what I call red light pain. And then he recognized some whispers or some biomechanical compensation patterns that were contributing to that pain. He felt his pain go down, and those were like yellow lights, those compensatory patterns. So then he starts to work at that level, and then he builds sustainability over those smaller movement patterns, and then gains better movement there. He becomes more efficient. So then as he keeps staying efficient, then he won't actually experience that red light, because if those patterns were then to, if he was like, I call it a life curveball comes and hits you, then you'll fall into survival mechanism. And then you'll likely revert back to your old pattern. Mm-hmm. And then your pain will come back. But if you are able to grow that stamina of the new pattern, then that pain won't come back, because you've got a new pattern that you're now grooving.
And as a person becomes more efficient in how they use their energy with their biomechanics, mm-hmm. how does that feed back to mental clarity?
Great question. Love it. So I get kind of passionate about this, and my voice has just gone up. here's what I find is really, really, really cool. And I mean, I've been in this now for 20, 25 years, and I saw this early on in my career, but I was young and I just saw it. I thought it was cool. But over the years, I keep seeing it over and over. Here's what happens is when someone becomes aware of their body movement pattern, and they recognize how the compensatory patterns of their body contribute to their pain, and then they recognize that the pain isn't where the problem is, it's just an expression of the problem. And then they understand that when they gain the awareness and they solve the problem that is, then things start to clear up quickly. Well, what bubbles over is they then start to realize where they're compensating elsewhere in their life, and where they're doing like non-essential tasks, or they've loaded up their day in ways that maybe they ought not to. Like I had one client, he's a CEO, and he was doing all sorts of work for human resources and for other parts of his company. And he really should not have, but he couldn't help himself. And so he was realizing where he was spending all of his energy elsewhere. And then he started to fine tune and say, well, wait a second. I don't actually need to do that. What I need to do is build better processes so that I don't have to get in there. I just need to oversee it. Right. And so then you gain the awareness of how else you're doing things in your life, and it just bubbles over, and then they start to become more efficient in those processes of their life. And then because the load is going down, the clarity starts to go up. Right.
Yeah. That is fascinating, because a lot of executive coaches start with the, you know, let's look at your job. What can you say no to? What can you delegate? Whereas working with the physical first and understanding the difference in how you feel when you're physically more efficient, and then extrapolating that to the mental is a really neat angle, because you feel it and then you feel the difference, and you have something to anchor what you should expect from offloading emotionally and, you know, in all other realms of your life.
What's particularly, I'm going to just use the word cool about it for me as the teacher, is I'm teaching them to be their own best teacher. So what ends up happening is I'm not dictating to them about what they should do. I'm helping them learn how they move. And then out of that, it bubbles over elsewhere. So then they are making those decisions completely on their own. And it's a very organic process. And so things just fall away as they themselves move better, and as they themselves become more aware of the feeling. Another way of explaining this is, about 10 years ago, I had a number of clients come to see me, and they all said to me, if you can't help me, nobody can. I've been to everybody, I've seen everybody, and nothing has helped. And I thought to myself, okay, this is interesting, because I know some of the people that they're seeing, and they're good, like they're very good practitioners. So there's a gap, something's amiss. And so I decided at that point that my job wasn't to advise people. My job was to help them feel, because we have a ton of information coming at us about parenting, about health, about microbiome, about, you know, fill in the blank, about everything, about the best way to do stuff. But how do we know it's best for us? And that's really the trick, because none of us are the same. We're all unique. And so the more that we can feel and perceive what's going on in our body and recognize what our body is saying to us, then we are more apt to make, like, to filter all that information that's coming at us a lot more clearly. And so even though I'm teaching someone and there is some advising in there, obviously, really it's not about Susie says. It's about, what do you feel? Now what do you feel? Now what do you feel? Then they start to build up this intuitive, perceptive self, which then can filter all that information. And then they're gaining this objective view of how their body is improving. And then they start to see how that's improving objectively out in their real world. And then it snowballs. And that's when they become really clear, like really, really clear. They can live more in the moment. They become a lot more confident about what they're doing. And that's when they dial back the amount that's on their plate. So here it just kind of continues to happen quite organically.
Yeah. And Susie, I know a lot of people listening can relate to poor biomechanics and inefficient use of our physical energy, and would love to start to feel that difference and understand what is working, what isn't working for them. When your clients go to you, you are watching them and coaching them. For people who don't live near you, do you have any advice on how they can take that first step in kind of feeling the difference in different body biomechanics? Like, should they go see someone and do it with someone trained in kinesiology or yoga? Are there things that they can do at home?
I think the best bet is, yes, to find someone who understands body mechanics that can help them see. And so I often say, like, grab someone who actually can see movement, which it's sometimes like finding a doctor. It's difficult to see. I also see the majority of my clientele online. So that's also a possibility for people.
Excellent.
Is, like, for instance, this morning I saw 7 people and every single person was online. So that's also a possibility. The other is that on my Facebook page and on my Instagram, I break down movement so people can get an understanding of what the movement is. And then I often will say to people, you know, get a mirror, put up your camera from your phone or from your tablet or your computer, and just watch yourself. And watch yourself doing the movement and see where you are compensating, where you're using other body parts to do something. Another trick that you can play with, and that's when you're doing a basic movement, say it's your hips. Are you overusing your shoulders? Are you holding your breath? Are you holding your jaw? Because breath holding and jaw tension and shoulders aren't necessary for a hip movement. And then when you're doing shoulder movement, are you gripping with your toes? Are you hyperextending your knees? Are you kind of holding your buttocks really tight? Because those aren't required for moving your shoulders. So you can look at it, start looking at it that way. Are you using extraneous effort somewhere else in your body that has nothing to do with the movement that you're attempting to do? Another idea that I often give to my executives and entrepreneurs is I'll say, can you do this movement with 15% less effort and have the same result? And that last part of the sentence is really key. Because everyone can dial back 15% less effort, but they might not get the same result. And that's the key part is to get the same result.
And that's really very, you know, insightful to really think about, you know, are you compensating? I think we, you know, probably all do it to some degree without realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of compensation. So I don't want people to get the impression that compensation is bad. If I was out for a run and I sprained my ankle, I'm going to limp back to my house. Like, that's good. Like, it gets me back home. Someone who has had a stroke and say their left side isn't working as well, they are going to compensate in order to live life. That's all appropriate. It's when it starts to get in the way and contribute to pain, strain, and that there's something we can actually shift. And even within someone who's had a stroke, there's still a lot that we can help improve, even if that part of the body is just not going to shift. There's still a lot that can change.
And Susie, you have years of experience with yoga. How does yoga kind of intersect with the work that you're doing with kinesthesiology?
Well, the way that I use yoga is really the awareness piece, and how the awareness and the presence and really feeling into yourself. And then with that awareness, then we can blend it in with the mechanics, and then we blend those two, and then you start to develop what Eckhart Tolle would say is being in the moment or being in the now. And you're really clued into how your body functions. So rather than, you know, pushing away symptoms or ignoring symptoms, then you're actually paying attention to the symptoms and saying, okay, these symptoms are here. They're not, they're like the, they matter. And what are they actually saying to me?
And I'm sure the yoga helps with the awareness of when you are efficient with your movements. And
yes,
that's
because you're now getting into a state of flow, and then you can become so much more efficient in your patterning. And what's so interesting is a lot of people, they do just keep pushing and pushing and pushing and go for maximum effort. And then they kind of go cross-eyed by working so hard. And the thing is we all know you can't sustain that. Like, you're going to break down at some point. And one of the sort of the cosmic jokes almost is that with less effort, the faster and more powerful you will be. I believe that's a Bruce Lee quotation, I believe, or Lao Tzu. And it really is, if you can do this in a sustainable way and you can do it consistently, the results that you get really are remarkable. I like to say that the turtle wins, not the hare, right?
So just thinking about that.
To kind of keep at it, right?
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of physiologic correlates to everything you're saying, because the body is constantly changing and evolving, and every part of our body is so dynamic that physiologically, you know, you can, you know, atrophy certain muscles, grow certain muscles, grow the brain, atrophy the brain. And when you think about sustainability, you also have to think, how are you nurturing your body to keep your potential at its highest by channeling, you know, all these pathways that help your body kind of maintain a certain level of work.
Mm-hmm. And people will sometimes think that the older you get, the more decrepit you become, right? That's what we've been societally told. And the truth is that, I mean, my dad started yoga at 79. He's now 87. And he told me that at 79, he said, my legs feel 25 years younger. I've had people who start to get better when they're 55 or 60, and they will say they feel better than when they were in their 40s. So there's this aspect of how we go about doing things can really make a vital difference in our energy systems and the characteristics of who we are. Sometimes we say, well, you know, I'm just this way, and that's why I'm in trouble. And yet the characteristics of who you are, if you're a driven and ambitious person, that is going to be the exact character that's going to help you get out of the predicament. You just need to learn how to channel it so it really, really serves you to your very best purpose.
Yeah. And how about, you know, body mechanics for, you know, people that may not be burnt out, but work long hours and know that they're behind a desk and that obviously it's taking a toll on their body. You know, things like standing desks, et cetera, or getting up every hour, walking, like, do you think those are enough? Do you find that people still have to increase their awareness and change more than those types of measures?
It's a start. The standing desk is a start. The ball exercise ball was sort of the start way back a number of years ago. That was the start. And then the standing desks have evolved from that, and being up and down and walking meetings and taking a break from the computer screen and watching the amount of time you're on your screen. All of those are individual steps. And so it's a matter of finding the equation that works for you. I mean, computers aren't going to go away anytime soon. Technology is not going to go away anytime soon. So it's how to best use it for ourselves. And then if we go get into an overdoing state, we all will in the future, then it's like, how do you then take care of yourself afterward, right? Like it's those things happen. People get on deadlines. Projects are required. Like it happens. And so to watch so we don't be hard on ourselves, that it's recognizing, okay, I'm in a grunt stage right now. Then now what do I do after the fact to really take care of myself and reboot myself?
And during that process, that whole, like, do you, you know, obviously you still have to sit a good part of the day. Is that process afterwards one where you take the time to increase awareness? Is that, or what does that look like after those kind of sprint episodes?
Well, that depends, because it depends on the person. So for some people, it will be, I know some clients who go to the spa, right? Or they'll go check into some like hotel and take a weekend break. Some, if it's winter up here in Canada, for example, some might take a weekend and go skiing, or like find something that is truly a rejuvenating practice for their spirit. And then that will kind of shift up the process. Mm-hmm.
And are there certain of pieces of advice that you would have for our listeners of just ways that they can incorporate more of optimizing their movement and their performance?
The key is to know that your body can change no matter how old you are, that it can change. That if you go and do just a few little movements, like shoulder rolls, for example, and you take your shoulders up to your ears and then pull your shoulder blades back to your spine and then drop your shoulder blades down your back, and just easily breathe while you're doing that. Taking a moment when you're in the grocery store lineup and paying attention to the bottom of your feet and noticing, I like to call it the three points of your feet, the center of the heel, the ball of the foot, the base of the pinky toe. And so rather than maybe scanning the magazines or, you know, fading out into outer space, like just notice your feet, like just be aware. Or when you're standing in line for the ATM, or when you're at a stoplight, notice your breath. Like little pieces along the way can help us just get caught, come back and get caught back into the present moment.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. Susie, this has just been so interesting. I mean, this whole concept of using how your body works and making it efficient and having that spill over into other components is such a unique and interesting approach to making people efficient, productive, rejuvenated. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you for the work that you're doing and for the wonderful information. I think this is just so insightful.
Thank you. This has been lovely to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.